Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Is Darvin Ham ready to lead the Lakers into the playoffs? That's next.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. It's always going to be free for you, never behind a paywall. Of course, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show and watch the magic happen. And more importantly, more exciting for you is to participate in the ever-growing community of Lakers fans and basketball fans who have kind of joined, and they talk to us, they talk to each other. And we appreciate it. We'll actually be using some of those comments that were left on the YouTube page on today's show. Specifically, you heard me talk about it, the cold open, Andy. A lot of people questioning whether or not Darvin Ham is up for the task at a time when the Lakers have very little margin for error of pressing the right buttons and pulling the right strings at the right time to make sure the Lakers can actually get themselves into the playoffs. This after a lot of criticism of his work in Sunday night's loss to the Knicks. So we will get to that, but we got to talk about Malik Beasley. And before we get to Malik Beasley, we get to LeBron. Brian Windhorst, this was over the weekend, correct?
Yes.
So he had some perspective on the way LeBron is trying to get back into the lineup and the possibilities of LeBron trying to get back in the lineup before the end of the regular season.
Yeah, reading this quote from Windhorst, from what I'm told, LeBron is turning over every stone he possibly can from a treatment perspective to get that foot in a position to return at some point this season. As crazy as it is, in mid-March, being two games under 500 at the time of Windhorst recording this, the Lakers actually have a lot of life. Now, there's no room margin for error. We cannot afford an Anthony Davis turned ankle. We cannot afford giving away a game or two, but they still have a window to do something special this season. And they can sense it. You can tell by the way AD is playing. You can tell by the way LeBron is trying to get back everything he can to get back, that they sense there is still an opportunity here. Do something special. That is, Brian, a bold proclamation for a team that is currently two games below 500 and has not been at 500 since 2022,
yes.
the early part.
January. I believe it was, yes, like the 21st of, yes, January.
I mean, you for all intents and purposes, their above 500 prime was in 2021.
Now look, I mean,
2020 special, really the championship season.
Right. We can have a debate over what special, like what qualifies as special. What are we talking about when we say doing something special? But you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, we talked about the standings for Monday's show, and obviously, we're recording before Monday night's game, so it'll be a little bit different, Tuesday morning when everybody wakes up. But, you know, the Lakers go into the games on Monday in this gigantic clump of teams between 33 and 35 losses. I mean, it's the Warriors, it's the Timberwolves, it's the Mavericks, it's the Jazz, it's the Thunder, it's the Lakers, it's the Pelicans. They play the Pelicans tonight. Dallas is going to be without Kyrie and Christian Wood and Luka Doncic for their next game. The Warriors cannot win on the road. They are 7-26 on the road. And, you know, I mean, just you can kind of go on and on and on here. The Pelicans are all banged up. The Suns don't have Kevin Durant. The Clippers have won three straight, but, you know, have been up and down all season long. It'd be a 500 team. Depending on how you want to define special, it is still on the table for the Lakers to get into a six seed. It is still on the table for the Lakers to win a round or two if LeBron can come back healthy. I'm not even saying that I'd necessarily make them betting favorites, Andy, but I think in a Western Conference that is this diluted, like even the teams at the top, once you get past Denver, who do seem to have a lot of drama following them around, you have the Grizzlies, who definitely have a lot of drama following them around, and Sacramento, who are a great story, but completely untested in the playoffs. So it's like, where's the dominant team out here? There isn't one.
Yeah, according to Tankathon, the site that, you know, is largely about figuring out your ping pong ball odds and stuff, but the Lakers have, by their metric, the easiest remaining schedule in the NBA. Took a look at it, starting with tonight's game with no Zion and no Jose Alvarado, Brandon Ingram. Maybe we know by the time you hear this recording, but for last we're seeing it, TBD. Larry Nance Jr. is just back from an injury, did not play much in his return. Then you go to Houston as part of a back-to-back. Dallas, we just mentioned the stuff with Luka and Kyrie Irving. Orlando, Phoenix, Kevin Durant still to be determined. OKC, back-to-back games against the Bulls, at Minnesota, at Houston, at Utah, who by then may have nothing to be playing for, at Clippers, which is a home game for the Lakers, hosting Phoenix, hosting Utah, who really, truly may have nothing to play for by then. And what's also
interesting, by the way, David Locke is sitting here going through the schedule, hoping for the same thing when talking about the Lakers.
Yes,
I mean, that's how variable this all could be. But you are correct. The Jazz could absolutely have nothing to play for in those games.
Yeah.
Talen Horton Tucker's revenge.
Piggybacking onto that, though, in terms of Utah and also just the general cluster that is formed in the West and the cluster bleep that is this big cluster, Utah currently has, according to Tankathon, the toughest schedule. Mm-hmm. Minnesota 11th, Golden State 13th, but then Oklahoma City 24th, Dallas 26th, and the Pelicans 27th. So this is about to get wild.
And it's funny, like, what does this have to do with LeBron? I mean, look, obviously LeBron is trying to play. He, you know, as long as the Lakers have meaningful games left on their schedule, LeBron is going to try to play. Don't know if he's going to be able to. I don't think they know if he's going to be able to. And, you know, but the chances of the last four games of the regular season, the last five games, the last two games, whatever it is, being relevant to the playoff chase are real. The idea that LeBron could even miss all of the games in the regular season and still come back for a play-in or the second of a play-in or whatever it might be, or a first round matchup if the Lakers get through the play-in. None of that is easy. None of that is something you'd want to see happen. But when you lay out the schedule, when you lay out the Lakers and how they've played Sunday's game notwithstanding, you know, if they take care of business on Tuesday, if they take care of business in Houston tomorrow, like, they're still set up to make those games count, even if it takes that long for LeBron to come back. And to say the least, Andy, while neither one of us wrote them off when LeBron got hurt, it's going, not to jinx anything, knock on all the wood you can find, it's going as well as you could possibly expect it to in these games they played without him.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we talked about last week how LeBron's return in a lot of ways was going to be dictated by pragmatic common sense, mm-hmm. or at least it felt that way to me. Like, because this foot injury with LeBron's mileage and, you know, the issues we've seen all season now with both feet, both ankles, they're going to have to take a realistic approach to how much you want to push this. And, you know, any type of risk towards exacerbating it, making it something that bleeds into his entire summer of, you know, potential rehab. Does it get
right? You don't want to trash next season for a 12% chance of making the 10 seed.
Right. Exactly. I mean, there comes a point where you say, look, the odds of making something quote special happen seem incredibly low. We're at the very least going to play out the rest of the season. And if, say, there is a play-in opportunity, then we reevaluate LeBron. But right now, the way this team is playing, and LeBron tweeted out his excitement after Friday's win over the Raptors, you get a sense that he recognizes this team is better. The collective confidence around this team, you know, in that locker room, Sunday's disappointing loss notwithstanding, they're confident. And I think if nothing else, they recognize we have an opportunity to potentially build some momentum for next season, mm-hmm. to feel good about the team that could be brought back you know, have the opportunity to stay in touch during the off season, work out together, like build something for next year.
Right. But I will say, I agree with you 100%. I don't think they're looking at it. I don't think they're looking at next season though.
At the very least, this is something that could be worth preserving this year and pursuing this year because it's not a one-shot deal.
I think the players recognize that they have something they can do this year and get themselves into playoff position and whatever. It's like D'Angelo Russell said, like agree with him or disagree with him, but his POV, if we get a training camp under our belt, the sky's the limit. We don't get a training camp, but the sky's still the limit. So I think I do agree with you. I think they see the forward nature of this, but they're also looking very much at the opportunity that's in front of them. Part, Andy, of them being able to take advantage of it has to do with a couple things. It's the supporting cast, it's Anthony Davis, and it's Darvin Ham. We will discuss all of those and their influence on the Lakers getting to the postseason next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by Ibotta. So you're buying groceries, doing school shopping for the kids, maybe even getting a little something for yourself. You're already spending the money, so why not get cash back for your troubles with Ibotta? With Ibotta, you can earn cash back on every shopping trip, whether you're talking about grocery items or produce, personal care, clothing, whatever you are out buying, either link your loyalty account or upload your receipt after you shop and get your cash back. It's that easy. The average Ibotta user earns about $120 in real cash back. With groceries, you can earn 2.5 times that in cash back from Ibotta. And Ibotta gives you real cash back, not points that, let's be honest, nobody ever gets around to using. You can earn cash back on hundreds of online brands and retailers, including Lowe's, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. And right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 for just trying Ibotta with the code Locked On when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store, download the free Ibotta app, and use the code Locked. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store, and use the code Locked.
We'll get to Darvin here in a second. Do want to note that Anthony Davis, in terms of one reason to be optimistic about tonight's game, certainly moving forward, is, you know, the last time it was actually came against the Pelicans that Anthony Davis put a huge blame on himself and kind of the self-motivating thing. He came out and played a great game. I think it was against New Orleans, if I remember right. You know, his track record in this is pretty good. So he was extraordinarily disappointed in how he played on Sunday. So I am personally looking very closely and with a great interest to see how Anthony Davis performs tonight. This would be a great game for him to go ahead and carry them through.
Yeah, he criticized himself after the game, you know, with his own offense, said that he didn't do his part, put the loss on him. And you and I both thought, while he has played better games, that might have been a little too much. But then I looked at his splits and wins versus losses, Brian. He shoots about 6% lower from the field and from the line when the Lakers lose, which is a notable disparity.
And what you'd expect, by the way.
Yeah,
you know, disparity. You know, they win more when he plays well and lose more when he doesn't.
Yeah, so, you know, and given that he was below 500 from the field and 20% at the line against the Knicks, maybe it really was all on Anthony Davis. Even if it shouldn't be, maybe it really was. Like, they may just be that dependent on him.
Let's talk about that, because, you know, it's the sliding scale. The better Anthony Davis is, the less good other players need to be, because he can pick up the slack for two or three or four of them at once when he's playing in full beast mode. The flip side of that is it is easier for Anthony Davis to play in full beast mode when other guys are playing a little bit better. And one guy who has not played well is Malik Beasley. The numbers for him as a Laker are not good. You look at it, you know, the 3-point percentage is under 33%, 32.5%. The shooting percentage overall, 37%. Very inefficient performances from the floor. And what might have seemed sort of like, you know, adjustment, growing pains, no D'Angelo Russell, whatever it is. However you want to chop this thing up, Andy, Malik Beasley has not performed particularly well as a Laker. Sunday was a really good example of that. And it is difficult for the Lakers to overcome, in that particular game, Vanderbilt, Troy Brown, Malik Beasley offered very little. But the trends for Beasley is he's been, you know, Vanderbilt's had a lot of good games. Troy Brown, until the last two, has been very good over the last month or so. Beasley needs to pick it up.
Yeah, it's not even that he's in a slump. His numbers are actually getting progressively worse. Like, I looked at his splits from the last 10 games, last 8 games, last 4 games, like just the trends. And he's gone from last 10 games, 36% from the field, 32% from behind the arc, 11 points per game. 8 to 16 feet, 31% from the field, not great. 16 to 24, 17%, really not great. Shooting well from the corners, but on above the break threes, 28%. And he took about 4.5 times more of those than the corners. Last 8 games, which is basically D'Angelo's absence plus the 2 games D'Lo was back, points go down, percentage goes down to 33%, 27% from behind the arc. Corners at 43%, dropping down a bit, 25% on above the break, 7 times the amount of corner threes. The percentages from 8 to 16 feet, 16 to 24, also not good, all between 31 and 25%. Then the last 4 games, Brian, he's averaging 13 points per game, which sounds good until I point out that he's averaging 12 field goals per game, 30% from the field, rounding up, 22% from the behind the arc, rounding up, 8 to 16 feet, 20% from the right corner three, 25%, and above the break, 21%. And that's at 5 times the volume of the corner three. So a big problem Beasley's been having is he's taking a lot of above the break threes, missing those, but he's also just missing from everywhere on the floor.
You know, you mentioned we were kind of texting back and forth a little bit before the show, just kind of figuring out topics and this and that. And a lot of people actually on the YouTube page have started to mention, as they've seen some of the same numbers and the same performances that you have, you know, what about Lonnie Walker? I will say this, because Beasley, if he's not shooting the ball well, you know, he's not a notable defender, I think, by any stretch.
I'm not saying that he was being full on picked on, but the Knicks were actually at times seeking him out. Like, they were starting to, if nothing else, target him a little bit in terms of one-on-one matches or whatever.
There's, you know, you look at the numbers, and I was interested here. The one thing you can say in terms of giving Beasley some leeway here to work his way out of this offensive slump is his net impact on the team when he plays. You know, small sample sizes, I'm not breaking this down by every lineup, who's been playing with the reserves, when's garbage time, this, that, whatever. But overall, I mean, he's only played 12 games in LA. And his net rating is still above water. You know, he's a positive 1.4. That's in line with, you know, Austin Reeves for the season, Rui Hachimura for his time in the Lakers. And, you know, it's just a little below Dennis Schroeder. It's above Troy Brown. Like, he's right in the middle of the road for the Lakers. Lonnie Walker has the lowest net rating on the team by a mile for anybody who has played this season. Again, context matters. When was Walker playing? Who was available in lineups? I understand all that.
But he's gotten the least benefit of, you know, better help in terms of the post deadline moves by Pelinka,
right?
Because
no
those
question.
Same moves took Walker out of the rotation.
But as much as I like Walker, he's different. He's even a different kind of 3-point shooter in terms of how he gets his shot off, where those shots come from, what kinds of actions you can do. And he is a terrible defender. He's not good. And I'm not saying he's not trying. I'm not saying he didn't put out the effort. I'm not saying he's not interested. The results are not good. And they've gotten progressively worse over the course of the season. So I don't think, maybe we can kind of use this as a jumping off point to talk about Darvin after the break. I don't think for people who are looking for changes to be made, this is a place where it's going to be done. I think, short of injury or just catastrophically bad performances, he's going to be given every opportunity to work his way through this, as long as the defensive effort and the defensive execution stays relatively above water, or at the very least, relatively above Lonnie. I don't see this being something that changes.
There's also too the element of next season and figuring out whether or not you want to pick up Malik Beasley's option, even taking into account some of that might be so you have a tradable contract at that price. Mm-hmm. You still have to decide whether or not you want to do it. They have more information on Lonnie Walker, who becomes more, if say Lonnie shows out, gets back in the rotation, shows out, the Lakers go on a playoff run, Lonnie plays really well and all of a sudden puts himself in a position where he could get paid, then the Lakers have less ability to retain him anyway. So it becomes, right, you know, this double-edged sword. The one thing I will say could be in Lonnie's favor if this slump continues for Beasley is he's a much more varied scorer than Beasley. Like, Lonnie can score in more ways than Malik Beasley.
Correct.
Can.
That is true.
So he's a more, I mean, Malik Beasley is an athletic player, but Lonnie Walker is more dynamic.
I made the joke about Lonnie Walker. You mentioned Beasley's ability, you know, his numbers at the rim are good. But he's never there. Lonnie Walker attacks the rim much more effectively.
And I think while Lonnie is not a great playmaker, I think he looks to be more of a playmaker than Beasley does. So
the face I'm making is not agreeing with you or disagreeing with you that he does. It's whether it's a good or a bad thing that he does. I think it's like, in some ways, Beasley staying in his lane might be better for the Lakers in terms of the execution of their offense than Lonnie Walker attempting to be a playmaker.
I think, though, on balance, you are correct. I would be surprised if Walker ended up taking those minutes from Beasley, unless Beasley's slump really continues and becomes so pronounced that the gravity and threat of his shot, you can tell, isn't affecting defenses at all. Yep. Because then you really do have to wonder, what is he doing out here?
Let's talk. This was one of the things that I saw, you know, a couple people mentioning on the Locked On Lakers chat boards, but not necessarily the biggest criticism of Darvin Ham. But let's dive into that. Is Darvin ready for what's in front of him right now at a time where coaching mistakes, rookie coaching mistakes, whatever it might be, are amplified? We'll do that next.
Locked On Lakers is brought to you by FanDuel, and the NBA season is in the home stretch, and that makes it a perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sports book, and new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's a grand. That's bonus bets back, even if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, super easy to use. You can bet on everything from the money line to point scorers, threes drained, or get saucy with an exclusive bet like the 2x3, 2 3-pointers scored in the first 3 minutes. And FanDuel even lets you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with a same game parlay. So do not miss the chance to get your first no sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/lockedon. That's FanDuel.com/lockedon to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA.
So I do want to remind people that Ibotta gives you cash back on hundreds of groceries, from produce to personal care to pantry goods. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 just for trying Ibotta, Andy. So you go to the App Store or Google Play and download the free Ibotta app. So the big criticism of Darvin over the course of the season has been rotations. It's been lineup choices. It's why Dennis Schroeder. It's why three guards when Russell Westbrook was one of them. Patrick Beverley, Russell Westbrook, Dennis Schroeder. Why are we playing these people together? Why aren't we playing this guy? A lot of frustration that comes out of a team that is not performing well. Whatever, but then a lot of legitimate, like, no, seriously, these lineups aren't working. Why do we keep leaning into them? The major criticism of Darvin that most people had after Sunday's game, and we talked about it for Monday's show, is the stretch that they played, particularly in the fourth, but it happened a couple times, where neither D'Angelo Russell nor Anthony Davis was on the floor, played without those guys. And I am not one of those people who believes, like, if you have two stars, one of them has to be on the floor all the time. There are downstream impacts of that, because you then minimize the amount of time that you have your best lineups available to you, unless you just want to pile up minutes for people. So it does have an impact on your rotation. But it felt to me Sunday, and I thought you agreed, that given how Troy Brown was literally missing every shot he took, that Beasley was struggling, that they weren't getting stuff, that just they weren't getting the support from the supporting cast that they needed, the non-starters who weren't AD and Russell, that this was the night where you needed to have one of them on the floor, particularly late in the game, the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that lineup that we're referencing, Austin Reeves, Dennis Schroeder, Troy Brown, Jared Vanderbilt, Wenyen Gabriel.
There are nights I would say that lineup is perfectly reasonable to put on the floor, if like sort of given who you have available. Even in the moment, I was like, I don't like this.
Like you said, a lot of this has to do with who is available. And when you're down one star, as you mentioned, you need to be conscious of the toll that you're putting on D'Lo and AD if you're never going to take one of them or both of them off the floor at any point. But this was a game where I think Darvin did need to stray from it. A lot of comments on the YouTube section about Darvin and expressing disappointment in him, lack of confidence in him. LaPaul, as noted last week, the Raptors shut down AD and Ham couldn't figure it out. This week, the same, and the other players couldn't figure it out. Ham needs to figure it out. Fat Buddha 69, once again, Ham got out-coached. Lakers need to use a 10-day contract on Moses Brown. Improved rebounding odds with Gabriel the 4, Rui at the 3. Ham stayed too long with Beasley. Should have played Reeves, Walker, Christie, blah, blah, blah. Kathy Boyd, Ham does not go without blame. Schroeder 2, Ham always rushes to get Schroeder in the game. For what? His defense stinks. Why does he change the lineup so quickly? It wasn't broke, so why fix it? AD was not totally the blame. People are trying to use him as an scapegoat. I believe we mean scapegoat.
I'm assuming that was like an autocorrect thing, but yes. I was fascinated, and I love the concept of an scapegoat. Like you're a bank robber or whatever it might be. I'm just a huge fan of the scapegoat.
Yeah, or something that you keep in your panic room when things are going really bad. Shareel Thompson, D-Ham, don't have a clue. A team like this needs a veteran coach. D-Ham doesn't have the experience. Craig Osterberg, Ham got out-coached by Tibbs. Substitution wrong. Took D'Lo out when he's hot. Also AD at the same time. Like we referenced, then Highland Adventures had a long comment, but I'll just leave this part of it here. Coach Buds used to do in Milwaukee when Giannis and Holiday would both sit on the bench, or Giannis and Middleton would, but the Lakers ain't the Bucks. Having a rookie coach brings its own growing pains. Talking about Ham adopting things that Bud used to do.
Mm-hmm. And look, I mean, I think there's no question. Darvin Ham is, he's watched a lot of games. He's been, you know, pulling the right trigger, hitting the right, you know, the right strings, whatever the right metaphor is here. It's not an easy thing to do. And, you know, a first-year coach, presumably even a good one, isn't going to do it as well as a third-year coach, a fifth-year coach, a 10th-year coach, or whatever. So it's interesting to hear some of those criticisms. Again, some of them kind of last all year. Like, people get mad when Dennis Schroeder comes back in the game. Dennis Schroeder's played pretty well for this team over the course of the year. I don't quite buy some of those things. Part of the reason that the, you know, Anthony Davis has been bottled up to some degree is based on things like Malik Beasley not hitting three-pointers. You know, Troy Brown and Malik Beasley going one for their first 12 in three-pointers has an impact on how Anthony Davis gets defended. You saw the difference between Toronto on Friday and New York on Sunday. Friday, the Lakers supporting cast made Nick Nurse pay for heavily overplaying Anthony Davis. Tibbs didn't quite go as heavy, but they definitely were, you know, shading hard towards AD, and it worked. So, you know, sometimes, you know, if Beasley and Brown are 6 for 12 instead of 1 for 12 in those first 12 shots from three, the score is much different, and everybody looks at, you know, everything and goes like, wow, like look, he's got everybody ruined. So I get it. It comes down to this question, because fans are going to be, some of them more emotional, some of them great analysis, whatever it might be. How confident are you, Andy, that Darvin can coach at a high enough caliber over the last, 14 games with tonight? 14, 15 games. I forget. to get the Lakers where they're going to go, because I don't think Darvin cost them the game on Sunday, but like Anthony Davis needs to be pretty near perfect, the coaching staff needs to be pretty near perfect, you know, down the stretch for the Lakers, 14 games to have, you know, the best chance to get a good seed.
This is what I think is really interesting about this. You know, first of all, just final thought on some of the comments left there. And I guess this would be something of a defense for Darvin Ham. You can't pull everybody off the floor when you have role players, and role players are often inconsistent. That's what makes them role players. If you pulled them off the floor every time they did something wrong, refused to play them, and threw them in with another role player who does something wrong, you refuse to play that guy, you're going to be left with nobody but your stars, and the Lakers are short one of them. But where I do share concern that Laker fans have about Darvin Ham and the idea of him getting out-coached is... I would say the biggest criticism I've had of Darvin as an X's and O's guy isn't even so much the X's and O's that he chooses. It's the stubbornness that's often come with whatever he chooses. And all coaches are stubborn to some degree. They all believe in their principles. They all believe in their systems. They all believe in ultimately what got them to the place, the ranks that they achieved as coaches. And we covered Phil Jackson for several years. Phil could be stubborn as hell with things that he did. The difference is, though, it's one thing to be super, super experienced while stubborn. It's another thing to be inexperienced while stubborn, because I think the inexperience sometimes leads to not knowing exactly when to pick your spots with that flexibility, as opposed to believing in the things that you ultimately think bring out the best in your team. You know what I mean?
I think that's fair. I'm sure there are people who are better at diagnosing schematic game plans than I am. I go to a lot of other people to kind of look at their reviews of like what the Lakers are doing from a schematic standpoint offensively, what kinds of players plays they're running, what kinds of choices they're making. And generally, the consensus seems to be that as they rebalance the roster, lo and behold, they're also running a better offense.
Sure.
Shocking. But I will say, to your point, we can quit here. The flip side to your point is, it is a very... If you're just looking at what, you know, sort of fan reaction, fans very rarely look at their coach when they win and say, man, our coach outcoached that guy. It's usually players win games, coaches lose them. I think especially when you go through the incredible run of frustration that Lakers fans have gone through over the last... I'm not trying to dump on Lakers fans in the slightest. I get it. I am generally more sympathetic to coaches that have badly flawed rosters than maybe some other people are, whether you're talking about other podcasters, other fans, whatever it might be. I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, when Darvin was given a better roster, that they started winning more. And, you know, the first thing that happened when Russ went to the Clippers, they lost five straight. It's like, you know, these are not easy problems. And I think Ty Lue is a great coach. The flip side the point that you were making, and it is an excellent one, is that all coaches, part of the reason that they might seem stubborn is because you also have to develop consistency. Another flaw that coaches have, and that young coaches, is they don't stick with things long enough to build principles, to build consistency, to help guys, you know, understand and get the repetition. When if you're constantly changing lineups, sure, if you're constantly changing schemes, then you end up with the worst of all of it. You have to have the willingness to stick through things. And that line between pivoting and staying the course, or tweaking a little bit and staying the course, is an enormous challenge of leadership in anything that any leader is doing. And so, and it is particularly difficult in situations where you're dealing with imperfect circumstance. If you're a really good team, these things ought to be clearer. I don't have a good answer for what is that line.
The last thing I would bring up on it, the idea of sympathy when coaches have imperfect rosters. The Lakers roster has become increasingly less imperfect. And when LeBron, I guess if slash when LeBron returns, you know, they may not be a front-running roster, but they are closer to front-running than they are highly flawed, which is going to raise the stakes for Darvin.
No question. No question. And they just have less space for even, you know, if Darvin's making a 3% mistake. They don't have a lot of room even for 3%.
He's got a lot of buy-in, and a lot of buy-in will help you through the learning curve as well.
No question. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to see the show and participate and have your comments read on a major sports podcast. We will see everybody after Tuesday's game.